like America coming somehow good to the season now?
Paul Ricardo. once again, that that mobile needs to be
La casa del Mopongo, pollo Mario de Queen, la boletería del Cirteo, información 212-923-3737, Cruce, Félix Cabrera y SBS Entertainment, se invita a Mega 97.9 y MedioWorldEspanol.com. ¿Estás trabajando más de 40 horas a la semana? Si es así, tu patrón te está pagando sobre el tiempo, te están pagando todas las horas que trabajas, te han despedido injustamente, te han hostigado, en tu contra, tu patrón no está obligado a producir. De trabajo seguro y legal para ti y tus compañeros de trabajo. La oficina legal de Borrelli y Asociados tiene localidades en la ciudad de Nueva York y en el condado de Nassau, y su práctica está dedicada a hacer cumplir los derechos de los empleados. Si sientes que te han maltratado en el trabajo, llama a Borrelli y Asociados. 212-679-5000. Tu patrono no puede tratarte diferente por tu raza, origen y por no hablar inglés. Tu patrón te tiene que pagar sobre tiempo y un salario justo. La ley prohíbe que te castiguen por tú defender tus derechos.
Once again, that station is within. Eric Dallard and Chris Carson.
Eric Gallard, by the way, is really a ham, and Rick Kilo Papa Hotel, and Chris Carson is really a ham. Kilo Echo 6 Alpha Bravo Quebec. And I know these guys are nice speaking guys, very authoritative sounding. All three of the guys, Mantra and Carson, all nice sounding guys. There's a problem in the drop. Each of them are giving us what I'm going to call mystical material, Montauk in particular.
Voltage is going through zero, the maximum rate of change of voltage as it goes through zero
the current is maximum at that point in an LC circuit. But that is not a TEM wave in free space. In fact, if you had that LC circuit oscillating, sitting on the table in front of you, and you tried to measure in what direction does the signal come from, you could look at the signal up, down, left, right, forward, reverse. It emits in all directions. It has no directionality to it. A real free space wave in space, a wave that's got vertical polarization in my example, where the voltage is up and down and the current is left and right, it has one and only one direction of propagation. The pointing vector only goes in one direction. If you aimed that antenna to the north, and if the signal had a perfect front-to-back ratio, and you could design an antenna that comes pretty close to that, the signal would propagate to the north only. Until it bounced off something, there would be no signal going to the south. If you had a wave where the E and the H were 90 degrees displaced in time, portions of that wave would have a pointing vector to the north, portions of that wave would have a pointing vector to the south. It would be propagating in two directions at once. A real wave in free space, unless you're using two separate antennas and two separate transmitters, a real wave in space does not do that. As I see the material presented by Mr. Montauk on last week's presentation that Wesley wanted us to look at, he's got some very serious errors in the beginning. He starts off explaining what he believes is a TEM wave in free space, and then jumps into what he calls a longitudinal wave. And he draws a beautiful diagram. He's got some very nice ways of explaining it. He sounds authoritative. I strongly disagree with him. It is my belief he's got it dead wrong. That's my strong belief. He's got it dead wrong. And then he's building on that and going into other kinds of mysticism. When it comes to the 3 hours worth of material from Mr. Dallard that Wesley would like us to look at to this week, I only saw portions of it. But I saw some huge errors there. Even though he's a very nice ham radio operator from the San Francisco Bay Area, Eric Dallard is a N6KPH, and Chris Carson, his buddy, is KE6ABQ. You can look them up on QRZ.com once you know their names. They've also got it wrong. And to follow them, because they give a very nice presentation before the San Diego Ham Radio Group, or the San Bernardino, I think it was, Ham Radio Group.
BASC Convention.
SBARC was the great big blue sign behind them. And they gave this nice presentation. One of the presentations that those two guys gave was with reference to a transformer. They think a transformer doesn't do what everyone has been saying it does. Let me drop.
That was a Tesla conference.
He explains that the current flowing in the primary winding sets up a magnetic field in the magnetic toroid-shaped circuit. That magnetic field in the toroid-shaped circuit, goes to the secondary winding. And we all know that it induces a voltage slash current in the secondary winding. He says it should not be happening because all the magnetic field is concentrated in the magnetic circuit. He's made a huge error. Huge error starts. If only the primary winding was there, there was no magnetic circuit. Would give him a hue, and he would be burning up the primary winding. He drastically increased the inductance of the primary winding. That's got at least two or three effects. Number one, it becomes a much, much bigger number. Because it's a much bigger number, excitation current of the primary winding. You wouldn't be burning up the wiring once you add the magnetic circuit. The lines of flux cutting the turns of the primary magnetic circuit does two things. It gives you a much higher reactance of the primary, and a completely hard to describe back EMF. If it wasn't for the back EMF of the primary winding, you would have a heat current in the primary. You'd be burning up the primary winding. The current flows through that wire would create such excessive heating that it would go up in smoke. That back EMF of the primary and the voltage that you induce into the secondary winding is the exact same phenomena. The rate of change of magnetic field in the primary is due to, you can look at it as two different ways. You can look at it because of its inductance, cutting down on the current flow by creating a much bigger reactance. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that as the magnetic circuit through the primary winding builds up a magnetic field on the first half of the cycle, so to speak, that creates a back EMF that limits the current. You might be applying 110 volts of AC voltage to the primary. The back EMF might be 109 volts, and as far as the resistance of the wiring is concerned and the amount of current that flows in the wiring, that wiring thinks it only has 1 volt. The difference between the 110 that you're applying and the 109 of that EMF that's being generated. But in that example, would be more than 100 times. Magnetic circuit sample would be developing 109 volts. The rate of change of magnetic field that's across the area of a coil is what determines the voltage by Faraday's law that's generated in that coil. So the fact that the magnetic circuit concentrates the magnetic field in the center through the magnetic circuit, and you shrink the magnetic lines of force on not cutting the wires, the wrong way of looking at it. It's the total rate of change of magnetic field across the area of the wiring. And whether that magnetic field is in the center of the coil, off to the left side, the right side, the top, the bottom, doesn't matter. The total amount of magnetic field in the area of the coil and the rate of the change of that magnetic field determines exactly how many open circuit volts that wire will develop. And once you close the circuit and put a real load on it, the only thing that lowers the voltage is the resistance of that wiring. Or it could be the resistance in the primary, because as you start putting load on the secondary, the primary starts sensing that increase in load. So he's got a very wrong impression of how a transformer works. I think both of these guys have got a very strong error in the way they analyze a TEM wave. And once they start off with those errors and then start building on it, what follows almost sounds like mysticism in some cases, particularly in the case of Mr. Montour. Once you realize what huge errors he's making in the beginning of his analysis, it's very difficult to listen to the rest of what he's saying. I just don't believe it. He's a well-meaning guy. I can tell that he's not just trying to lead people astray. He really believes what he's saying. But I think there's some huge errors in the way the material is to him. There's some huge errors in the way he's analyzing the way it works. And therefore, whatever he says beyond that point is very difficult to put a whole lot of credence in it. Let's see if we've got the machine coming back to normal operation. I'll turn it over to you first, John. I wonder if... claim that the Montauk or the Dollar is missing. Those would be in the tech net.
Can you hear this thing?
I'm hearing you very well. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I watched quite a bit of it. I watched that whole three-hour video. In fact, I watched it twice. Don't agree with what they're saying. I know Wesley's going to have a few questions about it. Also, I saw the Marconi tape. I don't know if you watched that. Did it doing the experiment and retracing Marconi that was out to California. Did you also watch that?
By the way, when these guys talk about longitudinal waves having the great advantage that they have no inverse square law, that there's no so-called free space laws, however many watts you put in, they believe you're going to get the exact same number of watts of output. My goodness, is that preposterous. Is that a failure of conservation of energy, if you know what I mean? When you're transmitting any kind of a wave in free space, which means to some degree it's spreading out in all directions, what we call free space loss is not loss. I could be transmitting 100 watts from a transmitter. My receiver 30 feet away may only be receiving 1 watt. A naive person would say you're losing 29 watts, therefore the free space loss is creating 29 watts of heating of the air in between the two. Absolutely not. The other 29 watts went to some other area of space. And what percentage of it you pick up is only a function of how far away and what is your effective area of the device. That's all that really matters. Let me try the other way of transmitting it. Be right back.
My sounds right.
You're not getting through.
No, I'm not getting through.
Flanking you right out.
This guy is within 1/4 mile again of the repeater. He's on a very small piece of real estate. He should be very easy to pin down. This is my tower. He's up. And he's moving. And he's not a street within 1/4 mile of the repeater, so he's on a very small piece of real estate. Longitudinal wave, first of all, that what John's discussing right now is that when you make a transmission through the Earth, it's not necessarily a real radio wave. You can use the Earth as a great big resistor. There is a method that's used for communicating with a submarine where they literally carry a multiple miles long piece of wire. And by inducing a voltage drop across the seawater, between the tip of the wire, a mile or two, or 3 miles, and the rest of the subject. by the signal strength. The sky is within 1/4 mile of the... But as I was starting to say, there's a way you can set up a...
$10 a.m. until 1:00 p.m. y este solo los sábados, dos sábados exclusivos. Estás trabajando más de 40 horas a la semana. Si es así, tu patrón te está pagando sobre tiempo. Te están pagando todas las horas que trabajas. Te han despedido injustamente. Te han hostigado, amenazado, discriminado. Se han ido en tu contra. Tu patrón no está obligado a proveer un ambiente de trabajo seguro y legal para ti y tus compañeros de trabajo. La oficina legal de Perrelli y Asociados tiene localidades en la ciudad de Nueva York y en el condado de Nassau. Y su práctica está dedicada a hacer cumplir los derechos de los empleados. Si sientes que te han maltratado en el trabajo, llama a Perrelli y Asociados para una consulta gratis al 212-679-5000. 679-5000. Tu patrono no puede tratar.
KQRIW testing. Now, once we capture the system, I think I can keep it for as long as I keep the key down. The resistance technique, what John was telling us, and I'm hearing him on the input, is he did set up two stakes at a certain distance apart in his property, and use it to communicate with somebody doing a similar thing some distance away. You can use the earth in a resistive manner. You can use the seawater in a resistive manner for doing communicating. It's not real radio wave. John was doing it at an extremely low frequency. He could be doing it rurally at audio frequencies. And at audio frequencies, if it was a real antenna, it would have to be multiple miles long. And the stakes, in this case, on his yard, were not that far apart. So there are ways of doing that. But these longitudinal waves, I'm not convinced that they exist. The longitudinal waves, the people who believe in them believe that they exist. They believe they can really be transmitted. There was a somewhat similar experimental article that was in QEX magazine about 6 months or a year ago, where something like a longitudinal wave was being transmitted, and that particular author thought there was something magic about using a fluorescent light tube as the plasma inside of a horn to do the transmitting, and it would launch these quasi-longitudinal waves. He gave it another name. But from everything I know, from the experiments that have been done, the longitudinal waves, I don't see any evidence they really exist. If they do exist, there's great advantage where they don't have any free space loss. Sounds preposterous. To believe that there is some kind of a huge conspiracy by which the early experimenters like Marconi and Edison and Tesla, that they were doing longitudinal wave propagation and experiments, and that some government agency took their equipment away from them, restricted them from doing it because they wanted to use that for themselves, that was some kind of a conspiracy to shut off all experiments and shut off all use of longitudinal waves. There are a bunch of people who believe things like that. The chances of that being really the accurate depiction of what took place in history, I think, is extreme and slim. So right now, as you can tell, I'm starting off very skeptical. It's in violation of conservation of energy, in violation of pointing vector, of everything we know about free space propagation in the far field. You can get some longitudinal wave-like phenomena in the near field of an antenna. You can get it's like some people who read the Bible or any other book thoroughly enough. You can read all kinds of things into it if you want to be very, very selective. You can believe that by way of the crazy characteristics you get when you're inside of the reactive near field of an elaborate antenna. You're super close to the antenna. You measure all kinds of crazy characteristics, but almost all of those characteristics you measure up close are what are called evanescent. That's a fancy way of saying you back away a couple of wavelengths and essentially everything disappears except one thing, the real transverse electromagnetic waves. That's the only thing that really propagates in space. Everything else falls away super fast by inverse third, fourth, fifth law, so to speak. What would you think? Sounds to me like you got somewhat a similar
Yeah, and Dave, see, and I wonder if I'm coming down.
Dick, I'll go on with one more issue. I don't know if you saw his description of power transmission with the two wires and his claim that no power is being transmitted in the wire in itself. It was only the magnetic field and the electric field that were being transmitted. Did you get that same slant with that demonstration, if you saw it?
I may not have gone far enough yet to see that one, John. So give me a few more words on that. In other words, by using a pure wire transmission, is he claiming some other mode? Was it like a G-line, a Gabu line transmission? Over to you, John. And by the way, you seem to be able to... This guy, you seem to be able to...
So the whole thing on its face is almost hastily ridiculous, unless they're compressing and expanding space itself over that gravity wave. That's the problem I had with a lot of the waves. We were having this discussion last week, too.
John, I think you're able to talk above him. I'm able to hear you in the input. So go right ahead. KC2WGB, T2LIW.
The time is 10:50 p.m. Welcome to the...
KC2WGB, T2LIW. Copying you very well on the input. So go right ahead.
Claiming that there is no real current flow that's being used, that just the transmission of the magnetic field and the electric field is what's actually doing the power.
Grounded, and he was picking up the signal, and he was claiming that a longitudinal wave was traveling through the earth, coming into the fire hydrants and plumbing, so to speak, and going into the radio. And then this apparently went on for hours. John watched quite a few hours of this, and I would be very skeptical of that interpretation, as was John. The way radio works, if I've got a wire floating in air just for a portion of the wire, I could have the far end of the wire grounded, the wire loops up into the air for some number of feet, so to speak, and then the near end of the wire is grounded through a radio. Because there is an intercepted area of that wire and earth, if I've got a sensitive enough receiver in that area, I'm going to pick up a signal. And that signal, 99% of the time, got there by a TEM through air method. The chances of it having been a signal through the earth, if it's a real radio frequency we're talking about, are very, very slim. Not easy to interpret this thing. One of the classic antennas used in military circuits that I've worked on is a so-called towel bar antenna. A towel bar antenna consists of literally a large sheet of metal, which in the case of the one that's on the EA-6B jamming aircraft, Navy prior aircraft, EA-6B, the large sheet of metal happens to be the vertical stabilizer, but it doesn't have to be that. Any large sheet of metal, where you literally install something that looks like the towel bar you've got in your bathroom that you hang the towels on, where it's got a bar that's suspended away from the wall a short distance. The left-hand side is grounded to the wall. The right-hand side is grounded to the wall. You build an antenna like that, where the far end, you literally put a 50-ohm resistor to ground. The near end, you put the radio. It is a relatively low-efficiency antenna. At many of the frequencies where you use it, the thing has a gain of minus 20 decibels. But because the particular radar signal you want to listen to is so darn strong, a minus 20 dB over isotropic antenna is perfectly acceptable. The good news is that antenna goes down to super low RF frequencies. The towel bar may only breathe a 16th of a wavelength long, or 32nd of a wavelength long. And yes, it's got 20 dB of lower than isotropic gain, but still it does a very good job of receiving strong radar signals when an airplane is flying close to a radar. In that particular case, the signal is so strong, you can tolerate an extra 20 dB of loss. So that kind of an antenna, I could, if I want to, start coming up with a crazy analysis in which I claim that longitudinal waves are being launched into that sheet of metal and walking down the towel bar and walking into my receiver. Not at all. That antenna, by the way, is halfway in between the two extremes I've been talking about. One extreme is we ham radio operators call something antenna where a high percentage of the radio energy put into the antenna is radiated into space. They'd like it to be better than 90%. In some cases, you'll tolerate 50%. But some substantial portion of the energy is radiated. An electromagnetic compatibility engineer, electromagnetic interference engineer, if the signal coming off the structure being studied is 60, 80, or 100 dB down, he calls that radiation. You and I would call that 0.001 efficiency. Well, the towel bar is halfway between the electromagnetic compatibility engineer and the ham radio operator. And in that particular environment, where you can tolerate 20 dB of extra lack of sensitivity because the signal of interest is so damn strong, it does a beautiful job. It's a nice broadband, wide frequency, very wide beamwidth antenna. And they put one on the left-hand side of the vertical stabilizer and one on the right-hand side. And by comparing the amplitude between the two, you get directional characteristics. You can tell if the signal is coming from forward, left, or right side of the airplane, so to speak. So, lots of different ways of analyzing these things, and you got to be careful how you put the interpretation, but for us to sit here and think that there is a conspiracy afoot with some super beautiful technique for transmitting longitudinal waves that have all of these fantastic characteristics of advantage, and yet some large government agency is keeping it from themselves and not allowing us to use it. It's like trying to keep a light under a bushel basket. There would be some enthusiastic ham radio operator in some basement somewhere that would be transmitting these longitudinal waves, transmitting it to his buddy, and jumping up and down with enthusiasm because they've got this great secret that no one else has got. Somebody would have detected that a long time ago. I mean, Tesla, Edison, and Marconi were doing these experiments at around 1895, 1900, 1905. So are we supposed to believe that for the next 105 and 110 years, somebody has managed to keep the secret from all of these radio experimenters in all of these countries around the world? I'm having trouble believing that. KC2WGB, I'll hear you on the input chat. K2LW in the tech man.
Well, you know, I was also thinking about another aspect of these pseudo-longitudinal EM waves. Just pseudo-longitudinal waves, because the free space doesn't really think it actually exists. When you start to think, for example, what causes the effect of, how does the solar sail work? What causes, if I take a big sheet of aluminum, place it in outer space, perpendicular to the sun, I get thrust, you know, in the direction, you know, away from the sun. It's easy to think, it's hard to see how electrical and magnetic vector at right angles to each other, and at right angles to that, cause the thrust to get. So, it almost seems as though you have pseudo-evidence of the solar thrust effect a longitudinal
EM wave.
That make any sense?
Sir, tell me your call letters again. I think you're coming through with EchoLink or IRLP, and when it comes to a solar sail, is it really optical radiation pressure, or is it the solar wind? There's billions of tons of material, real particles, protons, helium, nucleuses, and whatever, being continuously boiled off by the sun. And as that material at times peaks up and hits the Earth's magnetic field, we get the aurora borealis, australis, and aurora borealis, among other effects. So there's a hell of a lot of real physical material, real matter, real mass, being boiled off continuously by the sun. I think the number was 400 tons per second. 400 million tons per second is boiling off the sun on the average second of the average day. So is your solar sail intercepting that material, or is it really picking up optical energy and bouncing it and getting thrust out of it? I think there's a high probability of more the first than the second. So the person who was just talking, give us your call letters one more time and tell us how you're coming through the repeater. K2RIW on the bed nest.
Okay. My call letter, Kilo Delta 2, Bravo November Golf. My name is Glenn. And, you know, I was listening to this last Sunday and the Sunday before. Unfortunately, we had this jamming problem. But no, I think there is a real optical effect. I seem to remember from my physics somewhere there is an optical light pressure against the plate. If I have a reflective metal plate perpendicular to a light source, there is something that is pushing it away from the light source. And I didn't think of that. In the case of a solar sail, obviously it could be the solar wind. The little protons and neutrons going big, 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 protons and electrons. Well, neutrons too, hanging off metal. I have a combination of both of that. Yeah, I'm coming in on the, coming in via radio on the 440 input, which, I guess is, Rick's the other input. I was listening in 2 meters earlier. I don't have a 2 meter capability in transmit, so I'm coming in on 7 seconds.
Very fine, Glenn. Glad they're doing that. So, Glenn, Kilo Delta 2, Bravo, November Golf in Freeport. He's coming in on the 440 input. Very well done. Now, when you and I set up a radiometer, that's one of those little bulb-like devices that you can buy in a novelty store, which has inside of it the four blades, and each one of the four blades on this little circular thing are black on one side and silver on the other side. And lots of people have put that thing in the sunlight and watched it turn. And they assume that optical pressure is doing that. Yet what they all fail to do is look at the direction it turns. It turns in such a direction that the black side are the ones that are moving away from the sunlight. The silver sides are the ones moving toward the sunlight. That radiometer is not turning because of radiation pressure. It's turning because of air molecules being boiled off the black side. That bulb contains a partial vacuum. There's just the right amount of air molecules inside. The sun shines on the black side and heats up the black blades. The sun shines on the silver side and does nothing to them. The black side gets hotter. The air molecules hitting the black side get bounced off of it, and the black side moves away from the sun. It is the exact opposite of proving that there's radiation pressure, because it turns in the wrong direction. I wonder if you've ever noticed that, Glenn. 82, Bravo, November Golf. It's rather to be in the set
net. Yeah, I had one of those, and I think it moves the silver, the whiter silver veins move forward, the black veins move. Yeah, obviously for that reason. You have air molecules being excited by the sun. They hit the black surface and they start more momentum to it. It absorbs more energy. It was radiation pressure alone.
That you're fairly sure that a longitudinal wave will not propagate into free space. You said that on a couple of occasions. I strongly agree with you. I'm wondering where you're coming from when you say that. In other words, is it your electrical engineering background that gave you that impression, or other kinds of breeding or other real experiments? And by the way, in the case of the radiometer, the sun shining on the black surface makes the black surface run thermally hotter, higher temperature.